One out of 10 Americans lives in a planned unit development, but some architects think planned suburban communities have failed. Yesterday, architect Andres Dewani gave us a few reasons why. He says they were built for cars, not people. You need a car to get a quart of milk or to get your child to school. And even if you wanted to walk, there's often no sidewalk to walk on. Dewani and his partner, Elizabeth Platter-Zeeberg, build new communities modeled on the small town. In The Atlantic magazine, they were described as the masters and the most prolific practitioners of this new, old form of design. And their Florida community, Seaside, was described as the most celebrated new town of the 80s. I asked Dewani how he designs a town so that what you need is within walking distance.
The suburbs, basically, should be designed as neighborhoods. And each neighborhood should have a center, possibly with a square, almost certainly with a corner store and a daycare center, and that center should be within 5 minutes walking distance of the majority of the residents. The reason I say 5 minutes is that almost everyone will walk 5 minutes rather than drive. Now, that becomes doubly important when you think of potentially public transit in the future. If we are to have public transit, whether it's streetcars or buses, people will use it only if they can walk to it. People do not get in their cars and then park and then take the bus or the streetcar. You need to capture the public transit population within walking distance. So the basic increment of planning that we use in our communities is the 5 minute walking distance. That is the size.
What do you think makes for a good suburban sidewalk?
It is important. There are several things that are important. One is that the sidewalk should be buffered by a line of parked cars. People should park on the street because that line of parked cars provides a buffer to the moving cars. And it is comfortable to be in a sidewalk only when you're buffered. Another very important thing we cannot forget is that human beings are human beings and they like to be amused. And that the buildings which align the street should have windows and doors and porches and not parking garages or garage doors. People do not like walking past parking lots or parked cars. And it is important that whenever codes are written, that there be some provision for the car being parked somewhere away from the sidewalk so that people can experience the buildings that they walk by. One other thing, of course, is the provision of trees, I don't think, is an option. Street trees are a social necessity.
So you like parallel parking along the sidewalk, alongside the sidewalk, but you don't like a parking lot where all the parked cars are
Yes.
adjoining the sidewalk.
Right. Right. There's a difference between parking on streets. The best streets in the world have parking. The best squares in the world have parking. Parking in single layer is just fine. The problem comes when we have these enormous parking lots. Parking lots are always negative. They feel bad when cars are there, and they feel bad when cars are gone.
So where would you put the parking lots?
I would put them in the backs of the buildings so that going from the street into the block would be, there would be the lanes on which the cars travel, there would be the parked cars, there would be the trees, then there would be the sidewalks, and then there would be the buildings, and then behind the buildings would be the parking lots.
So as you've said, in communities that you're designing, you have shops and town centers within a five-minute walking distance.
Yes.
What comprises a good town center in your design?
Well, there are minimum town centers that I can describe very easily. There needs to be some kind of space or place. It can be a special intersection or it can be a town square. And that town square should be a source of civic pride. In other words, it shouldn't be a playground or a high school basketball court. There's a place for that elsewhere. But the town center should be a place of civic consequence. It should be maintained, in other words. And then the corner store is, I think, terribly important because it absorbs many of the car trips, especially the mindless car trips that we would otherwise make. You can walk and buy milk or orange juice or cat food or whatever instead of having to drive for everything that you forget. And that corner store isn't just a utilitarian place where you shop. It's also the social center. You go there and you might meet other people. It is particularly good if it's associated with a post office and with a bank, one of these automatic bank tellers, because that brings a lot of people to that area, and again, the people meet each other. And finally, that corner store makes a wonderful place to wait for the bus or the streetcar, because you can wait in shelter, you can get a cup of coffee and a newspaper, and wait in dignity for the public transit. We underestimate how awful it is to wait for a bus in one of those awful benches which are provided. It's very undignified. It's important not only to provide safe, clean, and decent public transit, it is important that the place where one waits is also a place of dignity. And that cannot be underestimated.
So you'd have the equivalent of a corner store within walking distance. What about the big supermarkets and the Kmarts?
Oh, well, the supermarket continues to be necessary, because there are certain uses that we will not walk to, the ones that involve a lot of carrying. We're accustomed to doing big shopping trips, so once a week or so, you can go to the supermarket and pick up 12 bags. Also, the dry cleaning, that's heavy stuff to be walking around with, so you drive to that. But there are other uses. For example, eating someplace, that doesn't require the carrying of anything. You can easily walk to a restaurant. In fact, it's a pleasure to walk before and after you eat. You can drop a kid off at the daycare center without having to drive. And there's a multiplicity of uses which can be handled by walking. But we're very realistic, and we know that certain American habits, such as the shopping trip, the large weekly shopping trip, will continue to take place, and we do provide enough parking for those. In fact, we provide enough parking. These traditional towns, the new ones that we're designing, are walkable, but they also have all the necessary parking. We're not eliminating that.
Now, I think in the towns that you're designing, you have apartment space mm-hmm. over all the stores. Why do you like to have apartments over the shops?
Several reasons. One is that we like places to be alive during the day and during the night. If you have these neighborhoods in which you only, which are only workplaces, and they're abandoned at night, they're not even safe. So having both housing and housing and shops and office buildings together gives a nighttime and daytime use to a place. Also, the parking can be shared. You know, some of the parking is used during the day, and then the parking lot can be used at night for the people who live above the stores or near the stores. It doesn't have to be above. As opposed to the condition we have now, in which we have to make two huge parking lots, some of them for use during the day and some of them for the night. But above all, we found that senior citizens very much enjoy living at the town center above the store, because that's where the action is, there's lots to look at, and they can fulfill their daily needs by very short walking trips.
Is this also a way to get more inexpensive housing into the community? I imagine the apartments over stores would be less expensive than whole units.
Sure, you're absolutely right. The apartment above the store is not the American dream, and therefore it tends to be delivered affordably, and it tends to remain affordable. The problem with other types of affordable housing is that when you do a very good job with it, it becomes expensive. But apartments above the store tend to remain relatively affordable.
When you're designing one of your communities, do you have to fight zoning ordinances as you build?
We often do. The zoning ordinances, which are presumed to be neutral, in fact, we find are not neutral at all. And what they have in mind is the suburban sprawl, which we see all around us. The zoning ordinances, the way they're written, actually are premised on high traffic use, on high traffic, high parking, and the segregation of uses. And if you were to come in and say, well, I have designed here this little town, which is just like that little town that you love, in the county, say, and you put forth a design, they'll say, well, this needs 10, 15, 20, 25 variances to build something like that. What we found is that in the end, the codes that are in place promote suburban sprawl, and they make it virtually impossible for a developer to easily build a traditional town.
So what do you do?
Well, we find developers that are willing to put up with the inconvenience of of getting the variances. We sometimes write new ordinances. Often we find that when we point this out to the citizenry or to the political leaders, they say, well, we didn't know this was the case. Can you write an ordinance for us that will make traditional towns possible? And we do that. But in the end, I think that what we do is just hold out until we get it right. And it's really not as difficult as it seems. In most places, people are so sick and tired of the traffic and the congestion and the pollution and the stress that they know what we're talking about, and they lift their restrictions fairly quickly. We find that we're very received very kindly by most places when we propose a traditional town.
Have you ever lived in the kind of traditional town that you were trying to do a contemporary version of?
Well, we have lived. I grew up in Barcelona in Spain, which is larger than a town, but it is a traditional city. My partner Elizabeth grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, and whenever we have the chance, for vacations, for example, we go to traditional towns and live the life of which we describe. So we know what it's like, and it's not available to us currently in Miami. Otherwise, you can be certain that we would immediately move to whatever is available. Which feels and functions like a traditional town.
Architect Andres Duwani, he and his partner Elizabeth Platter-Zeeburk have an architectural firm based in Miami.